"Additional capital needed?" he asked. "Yes," Jane said before Malik could open his mouth. "All salary levels will be maintained. We have a rather liberal policy of bonuses and salary reviews, you know." "You will continue to operate the facilities as you see fit," Jane said. "The council will take the responsibility for management."
"Including price setting," Malik added.
"5 years, with renewal option."
Malik hesitated, then said,
"Over a total of 20 years.
3 renewable options, then," said Jane.
Nobuhiko closed his eyes for a moment, as if communing with spirits. When he opened them again, he said,
"Very well. I will sign such an agreement.
And you will get the others in the Big Seven to sign similar agreements?"
"Those you haven't already seized," Nobu said.
"Excellent." All 4 of them rose and shook hands across the coffee table. Not one of them smiled. In Paris, it was 2 in the morning. Raffaello Gaetano sat on the sofa in his living room, swathed in a burgundy-red silk robe, his bare feet up on the pillows, his eyes fixed on the video screen. Transmission quality of the picture was good, considering that the camera was about the width of a human hair and set into the ceiling of the hotel room in San Francisco. The sound was weak, though. He had to strain his ears to understand what they were saying. When the 4 stood up and shook hands, Gaetano fished the remote control from the pocket of his robe and clicked off the TV. Unconsciously, he bit his lower lip as he thought, "We wanted total control of Yamagata and the others. But Malik's made this half-assed deal with the Jap. 5 years. That ought to give us enough time to put our own people in charge. By the time the renewal comes up, we could have Yamagata Industries and the others in our pocket. If we play our cards right." He nodded to himself, satisfied that his report to Don Marcello would be acceptable. At least he thought it would be. Dan Randolph had learned a lot in 3 weeks. There was an underground community on the moon, an illegal, unacknowledged subculture that lived by theft, barter, and bribery, and now he was part of it. He was walking through the main plaza of Alphonsus City, heading toward the grand entryway of the brand new Yamagata Hotel, grinning to himself that he could get away with it. Of course, he had changed considerably. He had not shaved, and although his 3-week beard was depressingly gray rather than the youthful sandy blonde he would have preferred, it effectively kept his face from being recognized by the men and women walking along the plaza. And he was thinner, tauter. 3 weeks of living as an outlaw had burned off some fat. The people in the plaza were almost entirely Japanese, of course. Still, Dan felt a pang of surprise, and he felt annoyed with himself that he was surprised. He had known that Alphonsus was basically a Yamagata facility, his own astro operations merely leased space from Size Corporation. But he had surrounded himself with his own people so much that he had forgotten, down in his gut where it counted, that his Americans were a small minority of the men and women who lived and worked in Alphonsus. "I insulated myself too much," he thought as he walked along the pedestrian thoroughfare. "How easy it is to separate yourself from the real world. Big shot Dan Randolph sitting in your office and giving orders, watching your flunkies jump, ignoring the world around you because it was so much easier to let yourself think you knew what was going on. So much more pleasant to tell yourself you were in charge, to watch people hop when you gave an order. You took up swimming, while the rest of them were working to steal it all. No wonder Malik was able to take my company away from me. It was my own damned stupid fault." The main plaza was an immense domed structure, big enough to hold 6 football fields. But the city was all underground, buried deep below the plaza level. The area up here was devoted to green trees and flowering shrubbery, an open-air theater with a gracefully curved acoustical shell, small shops and restaurants, and pleasant winding walks through the greenery. A few flyers were gliding high above on rented plastic wings and their own muscle power. Soft music wafted through the air over the hum and hubbub of the crowds on the thoroughfares. To Dan, it all seemed like a giant shopping mall, the kind he had known in Houston, that created an environment just as artificial as this vast dome on the moon. A pair of young Japanese whizzed past him on a skateboard. Probably a married couple from the looks of them. Maybe not. She's holding him awfully tight. They shouldn't be in the pedestrian lane, Dan grumbled to himself. Sure enough, they were stopped by a robot traffic monitor only a few hundred feet up ahead, the spinning light on its head glaring red. The young man looked abashed as the robot recited its programmed lecture on traffic safety, and a printed summons chugged out of the slot on its side. Dan grinned at them as he sauntered past. He noticed that both the man and his lady friend had earphones clamped to their heads. God knows what kind of brain-numbing music they were pumping into their skulls. The traffic robots were equipped with radio overrides, so their lectures and instructions were piped right into the earphones. The long arm of the law. Just be careful that the long arm of the law doesn't tap you on the shoulder, he warned himself. He was carrying a fake ID that Pops Tucker had cooked up for him, based on data from Astro's personnel file that the grumpy old man had hacked into. It would not bear close scrutiny, but a simple robot might be fooled by it. The secret was not to be stopped and ask for identification. Accordingly, Dan walked with the flow of pedestrian traffic, as innocuous and unremarkable as the shrubbery planted along the thoroughfare. The coveralls he wore were old and faded from their original sky blue, but clean and not too frayed. The ID badge clipped to his breast pocket identified him as R. Jones. His shoulder patch claimed he worked in Astro's logistics department. He had left his pistol back in the tempo shelter he shared with Tucker and Big George, hidden it behind his bunk. He still did not trust his two new acquaintances enough to show the gun to them. He sauntered through the entryway of the hotel, past the built-in X-ray detectors and security cameras, and the two burly Japanese doormen in their bright new uniforms. Anybody could come into the hotel's lobby area. There were restaurants and shops open to the public. It would be a different matter to try to get into one of the residence suites. The lobby was gorgeous, floored with basalt from Mare Nubium, polished to a mirror finish. Like all lunar facilities, the hotel's various floors were deeper underground than the main plaza's level. There were no staircases on the moon, too easy for newcomers unaccustomed to the lower gravity to trip themselves. Dan descended a wide rampway, walking slowly like the rest of the crowd to admire the sheets of water sliding noiselessly down tilted panes of glass on either side of the central rampway into spacious fish ponds at the bottom level. Freely flowing water was still a rare sight on the moon, even though aquaculture provided much more protein for the lunar diet than agriculture could. Tourists tossed bread and other goodies to the beautifully colored fish. Dan wondered if they realized that they would be eating those same fish in another day or two. Dan felt strangely happy. For the first time in years, in decades really, he felt free. No obligations except to his stomach and his groin. No responsibilities except to avoid getting caught. At the age of 50, he was starting a new life, almost as if he were a kid again. So half the world's going to be flooded out in 10 years or so. Not a damn thing I can do about it. I would have tried to help, but they stopped me. Not my responsibility anymore. I wanted to help, but Malik saw to it that I won't be able to. Tough luck, world. I could have saved you a lot of trouble, but they won't let me. Malik. And Jane. Even she turned against me. We could have had a great life together, the two of us. But it was never meant to be. He shrugged as he walked, trying to accept it all philosophically. But inwardly he seethed. The more he thought about it, the less he liked his thoughts. Malik and Jane, Nobuhiko turning his back on him, and Kate Williams, the traitor, the damned, smiling, long-legged, red-headed, sexy-looking traitor. I'd like to wring her neck, he told himself. But he knew that was not what he really wanted to do. With an angry huff, he realized that what he really wanted was to get her in bed. Or anybody, come to think of it. The one problem with this new lifestyle is getting laid. It's a lot easier when you're filthy rich. Catherine Williams was speaking to Raffaello Gaetano from her office in Astro Manufacturing's complex in Alphonsus. In the 3 weeks since she had spearheaded the GEC's takeover, Kate had come to think of Dan Randolph's